Off the Ball, GAA.
David Clifford is obviously on a different planet. Like, I actually think it's ridiculous that me and him both won the same award. Like, it's ridiculous. he's on a different level.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
Off the Ball Breakfast
with UPMC Sports Surgery Clinic. When things don't move, rotate or bend like they used to, choose us to help you get back in action.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How's the head? How were the celebrations?
I'm okay,
Sunday?
Yeah. Haven't stopped smiling.
You were live with us on air afterwards and you could hear the emotion. I was wondering, I was listening to it in the car actually on the way back from Altogether Now. And I was wondering, I was like, I wonder why Ciara is emotional now. And I wonder, is it more so than the ones that you were involved in yourself and even before you were a player and all that? Like, was on Sunday just gone, was it any more emotional than the other All-Irelands that you've been a part of?
Oh, it's different.
It must be so different.
Yeah, like when you're watching, playing, you're on such a high. I think the only times that I really got emotional after winning was seeing my family because they were all bowling.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
way
too much.
So we couldn't help but start crying then. But now it was, you know, you just know what you go through in a season to get there, and then you just, they're my friends, and like I would have won All Ireland without them either.
Yeah,
you know, and the management teams as well, and just the bonds you have there. I'd cry at anything, to be fair, but it was lovely to see, and it was all like tears of pride, I suppose. And I was so relieved for them.
It's a strange question, but you know when you win an All-Ireland and you had a good few examples of them, what do you talk about afterwards with your teammates? Do you go through the game itself, or do you just talk about kind of, you know, the incredulity of winning the ultimate, or like how does it work? Like what actually happens afterwards?
Go into the dressing room. We did a lot of singing, dancing.
Yeah.
You get your photo ops. You might talk about moments in the game, but you actually don't. You don't really, like, nobody sits down and dissects it.
It's one of the least talked about games in sport is the final.
Yeah,
because you're either celebrating or you're devastated, and then you don't play again for a while.
Yeah, and then, like, I suppose when you start the next season, you might dissect the match a little bit, particularly if you've lost. Mm. But, yeah, like, it's over. And you're, you know, there's no point going into the detail of it. You've won or you lost or you're not there. So, yeah.
You probably also kind of just want to break from it because, you know, at that stage, I'd imagine, like, you mentioned, like, the emotion that's involved. Like, obviously, we all know about the physicality and we know about the training and the prep that goes on. But probably, like, the mental side of it as well, especially, like, after you win, you've reached the summit. So it's like, now we can all just, as you said, hopefully celebrate and enjoy it and sing and dance and actually have the crack that we've kind of maybe now that we don't have to, you know, think. Like, you know, I suppose with other games, after games, you'll get a chance to go out for an hour or two with your team, but then like that, you're getting back for the next game. So now you've kind of reached that moment, so you can just maybe.
You just feel so much lighter. Like, it's pure relief. And there's an element of, thank God we won. You know, but when you lose, you still kind of carry that weight. There's still something there, like a bit of a burden. So it's just a massive release of everything that you've been kind of trying to hold in or hold yourself together all year, that it's finally just gone and you can just relax. Like,
Sunday was Dublin regaining the All-Ireland, and it was the first time in 15 years that the women seniors won the All-Ireland without the men winning it as well at the same time. So they have the place themselves, so to speak, and it felt like the start of something. But Sunday was also the end of an era for certain players like Hannah Tyrrell, who got the injury, but it was like, you know, the most beautiful way to get an injury is bowing out like that, playing so well as well, scoring the first point of the game and then five overall. And then Nicole Owens, who we just heard from there before, we had Jean this morning, and she scored the goal in the game. That was her contribution, was the one goal, and it was huge. And she's been such a huge part of Dublin's successes over the last couple of years as well.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about Nicole is she's such a skillful player. You know, she kicks balls from everywhere, inside the boot, outside the boot. She'll get you goals. She'll make those hard runs that are impossible to track, the speed of her. But Nicole, for some reason, really, really loves hard work. And if you have a running session or something like that, Nicole, she tunnel vision, 100% focused, and she must win the running, the fitness, all that sort of thing. She works so, so hard. And that's, I think that's quite unique for such a skillful player. Usually skillful players kind of rely on what they can do on the ball and they can be lazy off the ball. Not Nicole.
So it makes her one of the most complete players in the country.
Yeah, and like through her early years playing with the seniors, she worked really, really hard on tackling and tracking and stuff like that. And like, she has the skill that Lindsay Davey does, that she can run 30, 40, 50 yards and just get a near hand tackle and win possession back. And that's such a killer to an opposition when someone just works hard, tracks back, turns over possession.
And what more is there to say about Hannah Tyrrell?
Just, I don't know. I said it before the match, just what an important person she is in the dressing room. In terms of, you know, everyone has massive respect for all she's achieved in all the different codes she's played. Like, but it's just how she looks after her teammates. And it's just her personality. She knows people's body language, who's having a good day, who needs an arm around the shoulder. You know, she can read the dressing room. She is such an important teammate. And she's a huge leader on the pitch.
Yeah.
But off the pitch, her presence in, you know, team meetings, stuff like that, she's very vocal, very informative. But she's a quiet leader in the dressing room in terms of her observing her teammates and being able to put an arm around the shoulder for those who need it.
I might get you to put on these headphones here because we can hear from Hannah Tyrrell after the All-Ireland win on Sunday.
Hannah, another All-Ireland tier name and a career now completed.
Yeah, look, that's the end, but what a privilege to be able to finish on a high with this special group. So, I'm lucky enough to have played for Dublin for so long with some amazing groups, and no better feeling winning on All-Ireland final day and close out your career the way I did. Not many get that choice.
Yeah, what a way to finish it, and your teammates there giving you lots of support throughout the game, and yourself, stellar performance, obviously came off at the end there, and you have the green whistle in hand even.
Obviously it's all about team today, to be honest. Our backs, I thought, were absolutely phenomenal, gave us that platform to attack, and our fast start was something we went after, we brought an intensity, I think, that maybe we hadn't brought, you know, in earlier in the year, and showed what we were actually capable of. But look, injuries are part of the game, so I'll get a scan, see how it is, but I'll certainly enjoy a few days before that.
Of course, and we were talking about there, you and Sinead sat outside on the pitch enjoying a beer on what was probably both your last games for Dublin.
Yeah, no, look, I can't obviously talk for Sinead, but we go way back. We played under 14 together in 2003, and we've been in and out of this Dublin team since, you know, so it's 20 plus years of career playing for Dublin, and again, how privileged and lucky am I to get to play with a player of the calibre like her, and then get to play for Dublin and finish like this.
And you'll celebrate the last one more than probably any of them.
Yeah, to win one is incredibly special, and 23 was a really special year, but to win two, I don't even know if you can dream of that. So we'll have one or two tonight, I'm sure.
Brilliant, congratulations.
Thank you.
Like, this is absolutely a time of reflection in a positive sense this week, about winning the All-Ireland, but at the same time there's going to be gaping holes to fill now for Dublin.
Yeah, there was an article in the newspaper of how Dublin, you know, their performance suggests they're going to dominate again for the next couple of years. But I don't know, I think there will be a couple of girls that will step away. I think January, February or March will be interesting to see who is given time to think about it or to be coaxed back in for another year. And who's definitely stepping away from the panel.
Would the likes of Hannah, maybe with a coaching position, you're saying she's such a leader on and off the pitch, it just sounds like she has that kind of, I guess, that energy and aura about her to bring a team together. So do you think maybe there's a possibility?
Absolutely. Yeah. I'd say give her a few years. She's a young daughter there, and I think she deserves a bit of a break from the daily torture of coaching and managing and organising teams. But yeah, like, it's not going to be the end of Hannah Tyrrell. She's going to dominate in every area of her life, and definitely coaching, managing.
She'll probably be playing another sport in the next while. But it's just amazing what she's done for women's sport in Ireland. And like, because like, you couldn't not like but get emotional like listening to that, but also like watching her on the screen and that standing ovation she got in Croke Park, like, because she's created something new, I think, for so many of us, like all generations, and what she's done and what she's achieved and what she continues to do.
Yeah, she's such a positive role model. And I think in sport, it's really, really important that those who can excel in the sport have to be really, really good people away from the sport. And Hannah is. She's a really, really good person in all the work she does for brands and charities and stuff like that. She's an excellent role model. And the amount of time she gives at clubs and events and camps and stuff like that, she's fantastic.
Do they have to be really good people?
Well, you prefer it when they are. Like, I think, you know, to set a good example, but people that you know, former players, say, oh, like our lads and our ones now, you remember them as good people. Whereas you might forget the bad guys. Oh, a good player, but not so good.
It is really interesting because, like, you probably, I imagine, I don't know, do you think about the memories of your ex-teammates and still current friends more so than actually looking at your All-Ireland medals?
Oh, yeah, I don't, like, the All-Ireland medals are up in the attic somewhere or whatever.
Everyone, every single person has the same location and the same disregard for this symbol of what you've just achieved, that it's like, I don't mind that. It's the journey together, to pardon any nostalgia and cliche about it, but it's a common theme.
Yeah, like I don't remember much of the four All-Ireland finals, like the actual matches. I don't remember a thing from when we beat Cork. Having a clue. The COVID final, I remember after the match going over and Murrin laid a wreath in Hill 16. I don't remember much of the match. You know, like, you don't remember the football.
It's like we
it's
said
such
earlier.
Shame.
Do you remember we said earlier about, you know, when you do like a report on something, a really like investigative report, and you write down, you might get all this information and you get all these stats. And then someone asks you about it once you've published it or put it out there. And then suddenly you're like, well, I can't remember anything.
Yeah, no, it's a weird mental block that people have, like, or just a mental binning of it forever. Because, like, you analyse games with us, but these finals that you were involved in, you know, I could tell you something that happened and you'd be like, I'll take your word for it. It's mental.
Yeah, I think I'm like that kind of in general with football. Like, I used to get, you know, the curly finger after a match to what happened with regards to a mistake or a goal. Like, I haven't a clue. Don't remember. I'll have to watch the match back to actually recall it. Like, it's just, I suppose maybe that's the intensity of which it's
totally.
You blank out.
Look, it'll be tough for me to watch it back. So they're 1-3 to no score down. It ended up being a 12-point game. Now, the second half was slightly more competitive. But you previewed the game with us last week here, and I was asking, you know, Dublin have Meath's number this year so far. Does it mean they're going to do it again on Sunday? But you were saying, not necessarily so. What happened?
I just think Dublin outworked Meath and just seemed to be more confident. I think they used Croke Park better. I think their style of football just, it won them the game in terms of Dublin played wide and they kicked the ball a lot, whereas Meath played quite narrow and didn't have opportunities to kick the ball. I think Dublin tackled a lot more up front, whereas their backs kind of seemed to ease out of defence. Meath didn't put that much pressure on them. Dublin were able to score from play. Meath's shots from play were dropping short.
Didn't
going
score
wide.
From play in the first half, Meath.
Yeah. So, and like they came out, Meath came out, they got the last two scores of the first half and got the first three scores of the second half. Yet still didn't feel that they were back in the game. Like, and there was, I think there was an element of some of them were just flat and had an off day, but I think there was an element of giving up, that nothing went their way in the first half, and Dublin are after getting clipping over a few easy points here and now, and we just can't get back into the game.
Well, yeah, and that was your sympathy for them, Megan, was that nothing was going Meath's way.
Nothing just seemed to be kind of happening for them, and it was actually, you felt for them, like I was watching at home on television, and you just really felt for Meath because you're going, we all know what they can do, we know the strength and depth that they have in their squad, we know what they can, we've seen them do it on a few occasions. And it just was not happening. But I think the physicality of Dublin as well, I felt like Dublin were just up on top of the Meath players.
Yeah, and I compare that. There's talk about, you know, the tackle and foul count and stuff like that. Meads played Kerry in the semi-final and they completely outworked Kerry. I actually wrote down what their tackle count was.
Right.
So they're not their tackle count, their foul count. So Meath committed 27 fouls, Kerry committed 12. You know, and the ladies' football, the tackle, sometimes it's just a foul or whatever. So Meath obviously outworked Kerry. They out-tackled Kerry. Mm. You know, they worked harder, got to the final. And it's similar. Dublin outworked Meath. Dublin committed 23 fouls. Meath only committed 16. So my view on that is Meath didn't tackle enough. They didn't work hard enough.
Like, the game could have been an annihilation after Niamh Heatherton's goal.
Mm.
And it was right before that, was it Robin Murray made up for her own error and tipped over the bar to prevent the goal from play, and then Heatherton had the ball in the net, but the referee had blown too early. Yeah. So there was loads of options where this could have gone the other way. But it was 2-8 to 2 points when Heatherton's goal was allowed. So at that point, this could get historical. Like, this would be a bit like Cork and Waterford in the Camogie a couple of years ago. But they did fight back to an extent, even though the tackling numbers are damning.
Mm.
They didn't entirely give up. Or was it more so that Dublin dropped their intensity?
I think Dublin dropped their intensity a little bit in the second half. There's a few little mistakes, like a few fumbles, missed passes, a few solos not coming back to hand. I think a little bit in the second half. Like in the first half, Meath dominated possession. They had more possession than Dublin did. Dublin took their opportunities. Like, I think Meath had 21 shots. Dublin had, I don't know how many shots they had. But Meath only converted 47% of the shots they took, whereas Dublin converted 75%. So both teams had similar kind of attacking opportunities or scoring opportunities, but Dublin were taking them. Like, I couldn't believe how Dublin started. Like, the ball just couldn't, like, just going over the bar and over the bar. Like, it was great to watch, but, you know, from previous finals, we've missed a lot. But it was just going right for Dublin, where it wasn't. But Dublin have more scorers, more threats, whereas, you know, Meade were relying off Vicky or Emma or Kira Smith. They, you know, the scores weren't coming from all angles. They were too reliant on individuals.
Dublin had six different scorers from the starting 15. It's funny enough, was the top scorer in the match was Emma Duggan for Meade, but six of her seven were frees. The problem was that there was only three other scorers for Meade in the whole game, and that was 1 point each. Vicky Wall, Kira Smith, Eveen Cleary. And it is interesting that, like, if this game happened again, even though Dublin have Meade's number repeatedly in 2025, something in you would still say it should be more competitive than this.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, 100%. I think Meade were just flat. I thought they were taking the wrong option a lot of the time. Like, Dublin did very well. They kept the ball out of the centre of the pitch when Meade had it. They just shoved Meade to the wings. Meade liked to go down the middle fast and direct. They didn't get Sarah Wall on the ball enough. She was free for half the match, screamed for the ball. She made fantastic runs all the way to, you know, standing on the penalty spot, you know, dragging Carla Rowe into her full back position. But they just couldn't get the ball to her. They were taking the wrong options, or Dublin were just cutting everything out.
Did Dublin improve as the year went on? Because they had, you know, the Waterford game. And then I suppose the Galway game in the semi-final was a near miss as well to an extent. So was this actually the best version we saw of Dublin all year round? Waiting for the final?
Yeah, without a doubt. I would say that's probably Dublin's strongest team, bar a couple of injuries. Cuíomh O'Connor, Lara McGee, a bit long-term injuries there. But that's probably their strongest team they got on the pitch for the final, bar those two. Whereas throughout the year, there's been such rotation in the panel.
Yeah.
Such rotation in the girls coming off the bench. So I think that stood to Dublin in the long term. Whereas then you look at Meath, they same starting 15 for most matches, same girls coming off the bench at the same time for most
matches. And no alternative plan.
Yeah.
When the game goes against them, the plan B isn't that obvious.
Yeah, there's an element of stick to the process, but Meath have played that way since, you know, they were winning intermediate. It's that same kind of style of football. I think Katie New was a big loss for them because Shauna Ennis then had to start, where she's been really effective coming off the bench. So that was a loss for them. And then Marion Farley in midfield was probably their best player all year. And rumour has it she was sick during the week. So they took her off, brought her back on. You know, so they didn't have an answer to their problems. Whereas Cuíomh O'Connor, having her best season, gets injured in the semi-final and Orla Nolan slots back in after a cruciate injury
player the match,
and player of the match.
Yeah. She could be on for a third All-Star, I'd say.
She'll be on for a third All-Star, yeah.
Yeah. Dublin automatically favourites next year, given the retirees?
No, I wouldn't say so. I think Galway will be kicking themselves. That's in All-Ireland that really got away from them.
Yeah.
I think that's... Unfortunately, the story of that Galway group of players that they haven't, you know, got their All-Ireland, they haven't fulfilled their potential. They'll be definitely kicking themselves. Kerry as well, they just didn't seem to look like they enjoyed their football this year. They couldn't
hit any bit of form.
Yeah.
Called, in fairness, early enough.
So there's something awry there with them. And then Cork are coming as well. They're coming good. They've had a few good minor teams.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't write them off, but look, we couldn't call ladies football. No one would have put Dublin and Meath in the final this year, and I think the playing field is quite level at the moment.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't put the favourite tags on anyone going into next year.
Over 48,000 in Croke Park on Sunday, which is the highest since before COVID, 2019. Mm. What do you put that down to?
Dublin and Meath.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which again, you called a few weeks ago.
Yeah, like
given the weekend, it was like everyone was all over the shop. Sure, you'd got races. I was in Waterford altogether now. There was loads of stuff going on.
Yeah.
So it's good. Obviously, you want higher again, but it's interesting that it was Dublin Meath.
Yeah, like I've a couple of friends that brought nieces, nephews, children, or whatever into the game that if the final was played down the country, they wouldn't have gone to.
Right.
You know, so there's people in Dublin that went to the final because it's handy.
Yeah.
It's down the road, it's a day out for the kids. The weather seems all right, you know. And Meath as well. Meath always bring a huge crowd with them wherever they go. Park Tailteann is always packed when they have a home game, league or a championship. And you could really feel that in Tullamore against Kerry, like the noise of the Meath crowd down at that match, particularly in the second half. But, you know, if Kerry had made it to the final, I couldn't see many people travelling up, especially after the lads the weekend before. Just, you know, the cost of it and the distance and bank holiday and summer and life.
Totally. Very last one for me to wrap. What are we going to do about the physicality in sport?
It needs to change. I had so many conversations with people about it at the weekend, and even referees. Like, the only way to win a game is to tackle, and you have to kind of concede that you're going to commit fouls. And with the back when I was playing, we got inter-county referees, senior referees to come in and to coach us through the tackle. We got representatives from the LGFA to come in and coach us through the tackle and the rule book.
Yeah.
And I remember sitting down, going, some rules, no, that's a yellow card. And the commotion in the meeting room when we were being told these rules, that we didn't know that was a rule or that was a yellow card or a red card, because the rule didn't match the game we'd be playing.
Yeah.
And you look at I love the clip of Niamh Hetherton's second goal where Cara Leroux gets the ball and she takes a step into Katie New, who takes the tackle. That's what Carla did was technically, by the rule book, a foul, possibly verging on yellow card. But the strength and speed of those two players, one of the best forwards and best fullback in the country. Katie New barely budged. Carla got by her, but barely budged. Mm-hmm. Carla didn't flinch with the collision. That should be a free out. But it wasn't, and that's how the game is played. Nobody's going to look at that clip and say, oh, definite, that should have been a free out. Nobody's talking about it. It's not front page news that Meath were robbed, that Dublin got a goal that should have been disallowed.
Yeah.
Another one that should have been disallowed. Because that's the speed and at which the game is played now. And could you imagine playing a game where the only way you can get the ball back is if it goes out of play, or the player overcarries, you get the ball back. You intercept a pass, or you block a kick, or you swipe the ball away as they go to bounce it or solo it. It's the only way you're able to get the ball back. It would be the most boring game at any age group, at nursery to men's senior into county football.
County football.
Nobody would watch it.
It's like the problem child of the country. In that we all love it, but it's there's so many flaws.
Nobody would watch that sport. Yeah. So the physicality is there. I was talking to a referee and he said that he finds it really frustrating that he's trying to let the game go, yet apply the rules because he wants to ref All-Ireland finals. Yet people are complaining because the week before the referee refed it by the rule book and kept blowing the whistle. And referees are frustrated with their own inconsistency. So it needs to change, but people need to have conversations about it at club level.
Yeah.
It's very hard to change a rule. You look what happened with the Scorts and it had to be like a massive emergency meeting to change a rule over what players can wear. And that conversation has been happening for years. So people need to be having the conversation about the rules at club level with their club delegates at county board meetings. Someone needs to rewrite a rule.
Yeah.
Why they can just adopt the lads rule.
Mm.
It should be fairly straightforward. Like.
Well, let's
but
see
needs to
happens.
Change.
Let's see what happens. Listen, thanks a million for everything this year as well. Great coverage. Kira Trant, all the best.